shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Today's Brain Wrinkling Wednesday on the Winds of Change. That means you're with Father Tom Coyce here, and happy to be with you. I do have a smorgasbord here. Got a smorgasbord of wisdom, and hopefully it'll wrinkle your brain one way or another.
We're on a mission from God.
This is the hour of mission from God. No doubt about it. Let me start off with something I like to do. Maybe you have these kind of apps in your computer that show you what went on this day in history, kind of thing. Us lovers of history, like to do these kind of things. Okay.
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Okay, let's do 1682. So in the vast scheme of things, when you think of 1600s, you're going to have to think of the major issues of the Protestant Reformation in the 1500s and the whole 100 years after that as it got going, and the 1700s, where the good old colonies of the United States were being formed. You can also think of the sort of the Muslim attempt to take over Europe and what have you. But we're going to focus on a bit of the Protestant Reformation and the establishment of the 13 colonies. Us lovers of America like to know about our American history, right? Anyways, today back in 1682, a guy by the name of William Penn. You might know that name. They named a state after him, Pennsylvania. And this is from a daily almanac that Bill Bennett, the former Secretary of Education under the great Ronald Reagan, he keeps our history knowledge up to date. Anyways, this is a nice way to start our show today. William Penn, didn't know this, was a constant source of frustration for his father. William Penn's father was a wealthy English admiral in the British Navy. The rebellious younger Penn got kicked out of Oxford University for refusing. Oh my, could you believe that? A Navy brat. He was pretty much a brat. So he got kicked out of Oxford University for refusing to attend the Anglican services, the Church of England back there on the Big Island. So he wasn't impressed with the Church of England, which in my book, I'll give him a few accolades, a few stars, because the Church of England was kind of new in the 1600s, got started with in the 1500s, of course. So, but anyways, we're talking 100 years old, but he still wasn't impressed with it. And hopefully, I don't think he was as focused on the problems the Church of England was inflicting upon the Catholic churches and Catholic saints. We all know that this is the era of the many martyrs, the English martyrs who were trying to stand against this new Church of England. And the phrase that we hear so often in the history books is, he was hanged, drawn, and quartered. Terrible, terrible way to be executed. Yeah, that's a pretty bad one. But I don't think William Penn was worried so much about the way the Catholics were being treated, but there was something that he didn't like about the Church of England. So, you know, and we could say if he had some more Catholic friends, or maybe he thought about it a bit, maybe he was disappointed by it. Anyways, he joins the Society of Friends, otherwise known as the Quakers, right? The Society of Friends, Quakers, because he didn't like the Church of England. It goes from one extreme to another. Well, in one sense, you might say that. Quakers were very low liturgy, very low philosophy, catechism, study, etc. So anyways, he joined the Society of Friends, a religious sect known as the Quakers, because their leader, the leader of the Quakers, had told an English judge to tremble at the word of the Lord. You could certainly give him kudos for that. There'd be a lot of judges you might think need to be a little more God-fearing, right? So the Quakers' religious beliefs and refusal to swear allegiance to any king but God led to their persecution. William Penn found himself in prison more than once. So Admiral Penn, his dad, was an old friend of King Charles II and loaned the monarch a good deal of money. So the admiral was richer than the king. When the admiral died, William asked that the debt be paid with land in America. So my rich admiral dad loaned the king a lot of money. My dad dies. I'm going to take advantage of it and say, okay, you can wipe out the debt, Mr. King, Charles II. Give me some land in America. The king did. He liked William, despite his Quakerness and not being a good Anglican. So he did grant him a huge tract of wilderness, which King Charles named Pennsylvania, meaning Penn's Woods.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
On August 30th, which is today, back in 1682, William Penn set sail for America to begin what he called his holy experiment, a colony that would be a refuge not only for Quakers, but settlers of various faiths. I'm glad to see that the holy experiment. This is an idea that we have to hold on to now, I think, especially my friends. We hear from time to time, and I like this phrase, the United States today, and it was set up as, and it still is today, and we need this even more. Well, we need it all the time, but we need it today. It's called 50 Experimental Labs of Democracy. Each state having its special autonomy should have enough freedom to do things differently than the rest of the states, if it so desires, so that it might be an experiment in political philosophy and the way to rule a land, a people. And so you can't help but think that some states are doing better than other states. That's the idea of the United States of America itself as an experiment. So William Penn had this idea of a holy experiment, and he was on the right track. I'll give him credit for that, for being, knowing that making the United States a officially an Anglican nation, much like in England, he didn't want that. He didn't see that. So right at the beginning, when colonists were colonizing America, each denomination really did want to make the United States, or at least their state, with a state religion. William Penn was one of the first ones who said, no, let's not have a state religion. We're going to be open to all religions. Fortunately, we can see how opening to all religions doesn't always work, because some religions might slip in that are going to take advantage of that openness, and with patience and long-standing efforts, we'll try to undo religious freedom. I'm thinking especially of those religions that don't believe in religious freedom. You can say, there's that famous quote from Valerie Jarrett, who was an aide to President Barack Obama. She said in her yearbook in her college, "I'm proud to be a Muslim American, and we will use the American love for religious freedom to eventually make the United States an Islamic nation."
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Oh, I'm bringing up a topic here I bring up so often. I hope you're not sick of it, because we don't have that complete answer to it yet. We still got to keep hammering away. We got to find the answer. And with God's grace, we can. Because William Penn was right in introducing this concept of religious freedom. But like any kind of freedom, it has to be nourished in a sense of truth. Truth of the human person, the truth of the purpose of life, many other kinds of truth. Unity without truth is mob rule. And to say we are working for unity without trying to debate the controversial issues to come to the best answer to a societal question is to give the impression that you find the true answer when you are just following the leaders, following the government. Once you're in power, you always like to say, "Let's stick together." Sticking together means stay with me. And many times the me might be wrong. So we have to question the concept of even unity, as well as the question the concept of religious freedom, though unity obviously is of great importance to any society, a family or a country or an organization, and yet unity in a truth about man, about reality, about the universe, about God, all these kinds of things. Anyways, that's this day in history back in 1682. So let's move on to something else here. Well, maybe we'll take our first break, okay, Nick? What I want to do a segue. There's a saint today that I didn't know too much about, but as we look at the saint calendar, today's the feast of Saint Rose of Lima. Many of us probably know Saint Rose of Lima, but there's another less known saint today that is also on my calendar, called Saint Fiacre from Ireland. Fiacre, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it exactly correctly, but I want to use him as a segue to a guy I touched on a couple of weeks ago, I think it was. I'm reading Walden Pond, On Walden Pond by Henry David Thoreau. And I want to use a contrast between St. Fiacre with Thoreau and to bring out a very important point that comes from G.K. Chesterton. G.K. Chesterton, if you remember, I tried to explain part of his conversion with that image of walking through a large, we'll call it a amphitheater or a large conference center with lots of booths, different booths representing different religions. Remember that analogy? Well, we're going to use that analogy to underscore something very important about our Catholic faith and the nature of it, why we should hold on to it, where it is slippery at times, slippery in the sense of hard to figure out. It's not always a clear picture. And it's okay to wrestle with ambiguities on some things, but it's not okay to make ambiguous what should be clear. I think that's another part of the problem we're facing in our church and in this society today. Okay, so let's take our first break. Okay, Nick, are we ready to roll? And then I'll come back with a little of this, the saints. And, there's another little episode I want to share with you too. But anyway, okay, let's take a break. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio, 88.5 FM, and WNDZ 750 AM.
It is amazing to be living in a post-Roe v. Wade America, but our country racked up a body count of tens of millions under Roe. And still today, the body count continues to rise, and the vast majority of these babies never received a proper burial. That's what the 11th Annual National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children is all about. On Saturday, September 9th, on this special day, the Pro-Life Action League visits the burial places of aborted children and other memorials put up in their honor. And we solemnly pray for God to heal the deep wounds of abortion in our society. To find your nearest day of remembrance service, visit prolifeactionleague.org and click on the tile that says National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children 2023. The National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children, Saturday, September 9th.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear winds of change over the air, what with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear winds of change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. Or visit Winds of Change Facebook page to see the Listen Live link.
Hey, I think that's my cue to start talking again. God bless you all for being here on the Winds of Change. I want to make a connection between a Catholic saint and some folks who are kind of admired as mystics, and yet they catch something of Catholicism, but miss something else. that describes all of us in many ways at different times in our life. Before I get to that, though, I want to read. Here's another very interesting article by a wonderful professor of sociology and director of Veritas Center for Ethics and Public Life at Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio. It is Anne Hendershot. Maybe you know Anne Hendershot. She has a very interesting, I'm going to call it, number one, a warning and a special call to deepen our prayer, to think about our prayer life and our the connection between our praying and our doing, because she's making a warning against what she calls performative Catholicism. Performative Catholicism. Of course, you got to.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, no, Will Robinson.
It's definitely in danger.
Danger.
She's saying that it's getting more popular today. It's a norm today, and the rosary is the primary tool in the performance. Now, I love the rosary, and I encourage all my people to pray the rosary. We should pray it every day, as our Blessed Mother encouraged us at Fatima and other places. But she's pointing out something, a good thing to chew on here. I mean, she noticed that President Biden, at times, when he's caught on camera, which obviously he is quite often, he loves to show off his rosary. He was in a virtual conversation with Mexico's President López Obrador. That's the president today. And Biden was claiming his devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And here's the kicker. Despite the fact that President Biden has promoted the most extreme pro-abortion policies in history, Joe Biden told President Biden told Presidente Obrador that he had visited Mexico four times as vice president, and during his visits, he paid his respects to the Virgin of Guadalupe. Now, I don't want to just pile on Joe Biden. It's something that this criticism of performative Catholicism is something we all should consider, and some people, it's pretty darn evident, or it's a bigger problem in some than others. She also says this performative Catholicism was also displayed during the trial in Washington, D.C., United States versus Handy. This trial was of several pro-life activists who were indicted by the Department of Justice for conspiring to block access to a D.C. abortion facility. Testifying against the pro-life defendants, one of the abortion provider's employees, a woman, had been working at this late-term abortion clinic for more than 30 years, told the court that she went outside of the building and she showed her rosary beads to the pro-life demonstrators during a protest at the clinic in 2020. She claimed that she told one of the protesters, "I am Catholic, it's my whole life." So this article goes on to say that this claim, like the president talking to the president of Mexico, where she says, "I go to mass and say the rosary all the time." The abortion provider employee suggested that her Catholic faith sustained her, claiming that her Catholicism is her whole life, despite the fact that she has been actively engaging and assisted with abortions for more than 30 years. Like the president, who has done more to expand access to abortion than any previous president, the rosary-clutching abortion worker appears to see no contradiction between calling herself Catholic and providing late-term abortions to women in her facility. So we gotta wonder about this. It's good. I can't help but say once again that praying the rosary should help us lead to a deeper understanding of supernatural realities and our importance of following the laws of God. We can't just ignore some of the commandments, especially the fifth commandment, let us say, or the sixth and the ninth. Well, let's say all of them. We can't ignore the commandments and just say, "I'm a great practicing Catholic." That's one of this hypocrisy that people may not see at first, but it rubs many people the wrong way. And of course, we all have to really be aware of that. So anyways, thank you. Thank you, Anne Hendershot, for that insightful little. Let's go to some of our saints today before this next break. We'll review a little bit about St. Rose of Lima. She was a flower of sanctity. She was the first canonized saint of the New World. She was born in Lima in 1586. Okay, 1586, again, putting her life in the context of the big world. It's, we're still in the back in Europe days. That's when the great wars, the great fights between the new Protestant Christians and the old-time Catholics were ablazing. The kings were feeling the pressure to hold back revolts and movements to topple the monarch system of government. And the New World was very new, at least for the Europeans gathering there. The missionaries were trying to convert the native people there that had a lot of pagan religions, pagan practices, including human sacrifice, of course. We know that from many of our studies of history. Anyways, so Rose of Lima, she was christened Isabel, very popular queen at that time, of course. Her beauty, the beauty of her infant face, earned her the title Rose. She was such a beautiful baby. She was Rose. As a child, while still in the cradle, her silence under a painful surgical operation proved the thirst for suffering already consuming her heart. At an early age, she took service to support her impoverished parents and worked for them day and night. In spite of hardships and austerities, her beauty ripened with increasing age. She was very much admired. And here's where it's a strange habit of some saints, and you know, you might question the sanity of a person who scars herself in order to make herself not beautiful. She feared vanity, and so she cut off her hair. She blistered her face with pepper, and her hands with lime. Must have really made her skin look deformed or ugly. For further security, she enrolled herself in the Third Order of St. Dominic. She took St. Catherine of Siena as her model and redoubled her penance. Her cell was a garden hut. Under her habit, St. Rose wore a hair shirt studded with iron nails, while concealing by her veil a silver crown armed with 90 points encircling her head. More than once, when she shuddered at the prospect of a night of torture, a voice said, "My cross was yet more painful." So she heard our Lord encouraging her to offer up all these penances. She must have certainly seen a world that couldn't accept any self-penance, couldn't accept any self-discipline, as it were. Hedonism was so wild. I think that's part of the way we can understand that this saintly woman, or any kind of person who goes to such extremes. Extremes in the spiritual life are so often a result of extremes in society on the other side of the teeter-totter. So I often think of the extreme habits of saints, or even not so saintly people, just regular people. There is an effort to balance the teeter-totter, as it were. If society at large is so hedonistic, pushing the teeter-totter on one side farther down, then you on the other side who see the errors of that hedonistic way are going to incorporate and take on penances and austerities in order to try to balance off unbalanced sense of what's right and wrong in society. So she died in 1617. She was only 31 years old. And we remember her and call upon St. Rose of Lima today. She especially helped and made comfortable the many people being brought, the natives that were being enslaved needed comfort and needed defending. Since she had royal connections, she must have been able to help a lot of people in that way. The Dutch that were not friendly to Catholics were sailing over there trying to settle Peru, and they were trying to attack Lima, and some of her prayers and intercession seemed to abate that attack by the Dutch Christians in Lima, in South America there, of course. Okay, so let's take our next break, okay? I'm gonna use the rest of the hour to make a comparison to another saint here we have, Saint Fiaker, if that's the way you pronounce it, F-I-A-K-E-R, Fiaker, or Fiaker, and Henry David Thoreau. There's an interesting parallel, not only with these two, but in many ways, things people find in Catholicism, but don't swallow the whole truth and nothing but the truth, shall we say. You know what I mean? I think it's a good thing to meditate on and share with you here. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You're listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNDZ 750 AM.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning into the Winds of Change. Sharing with you some bits of history and Catholic saint stories. Here's a saint I didn't know much about, but he's also celebrated today on August 30th. A guy by the name of Saint Fiaker, who was nobly born, again, someone from a rich, highfalutin family in Ireland. And he had his education under the care, excuse me, sorry about that. A little frog in my throat. He was educated under the bishop of the town, and the bishop was a saintly man. The bishop, this is going way back to the 600s now, okay? As the Emerald Isle, as Ireland and England were being evangelized by great missionaries. So the bishop there was a guy by the name of Conan, Bishop of Sodor, looking upon all worldly advantages as dross, kind of like as illusory, right? He left his country and friends in the flower of his age, meaning young adult, and with certain pious companions, sailed over to France. So he doesn't go, this is in 600, so he's not going to go to the New World, but he left the England and Ireland to go to the mainland, lands in France, and he's looking for a place of solitude. And this is where the connection with Henry David Thoreau comes in. Looking for a place of solitude in which he might devote himself to God, unknown to the rest of the world. Divine Providence conducted him to St. Faro, who was the bishop of who is also known for his sanctity. When St. Fiacre addressed himself to him, the bishop's the prelate, charmed by the marks of extraordinary virtue and abilities which he discovered in this stranger from Ireland, gave him a solitary dwelling in a forest called Bruil, which was his own patrimony, about 2 miles from the city of Meaux, where the bishop was. In this place, the holy monk cleared the ground of trees and shrubs, made himself a cell with a small garden, and built an oratory in honor of the Blessed Virgin, in which he spent great part of the day and nights in devoted prayer. He tilled his garden and labored with his own hands for his subsistence. The life he led was most austere, and only necessity or charity ever interrupted his exercises of prayer and heavenly contemplation. Many resorted to him for advice, and the poor for relief. But following in a difficult rule among Irish monks, he never suffered any woman to enter the enclosure of his hermitage. Saint Chillon, or Killian, an Irishman of high birth, on his return from Rome, visited Saint Fiacre, who was his kinsman, a relative, and having passed some time under his discipline, was directed by his advice, with the authority of the bishop, to go and preach in that and the neighboring diocese. This commission he executed with admirable sanctity and fruit. St. Fiacre died about 670 in August, close to around August 30th, we'll say. That's why we have him in our calendar of saints today. Anyways, I want to use that. As I'm reading that, I can't help but share with you a few interesting thoughts. I'm going through Henry David Thoreau's Walden Pond, and I find it interesting. There's a good example of what G.K. Chesterton says is often about new churches, new religions. And by them, he was especially referring to the new Christian Protestant denominations popping up. And Chesterton saw that many of the Protestant denominations, the new religions popping up, did have an element of goodness that could be found in Catholicism, but Catholicism was broader and wider because it contained all of the good inspirations, all of the good variations, shall we say, of spirituality. Chesterton compared the discovery of Catholicism not as a denomination among other denominations, but as the overarching reality or world of religions. And it was able, better than any other religions, to highlight the good and push out the bad. And so here's what, so take that little message from Chesterton as we apply it to Saint Fiacre and Henry David Thoreau. So remember the analogy of Chesterton was that he imagined, or he had this vision of walking through a big auditorium or amphitheater or warehouse, you might call it, sort of like a World's Fair kind of thing, you know. You go around them, and there's all these different demonstrations different booths. Different booths trying to sell their wares when you go to an art show or a handcraft show. Everybody sets up their little booths, right? Anyways, each booth represents a different religion. And before he became Catholic, he imagined that Catholicism was one of those booths in the amphitheater, but it was an old one, a bit dilapidated, and it had the sense that, well, who would join that religion? I'm going to go over here to Methodism, to Lutheranism, to Anglicanism, whatever other ism, all these different new religions that were popping up. And so he, as a young man, he imagined Catholicism to be that kind of denomination, along with the others, but it was just old and dilapidated and outdated and didn't have much new stuff to go along, as it were, to catch your fancy for the day. But then he realizes, no, Catholicism wasn't one booth in the amphitheater. It was the amphitheater of faith, of religions itself. Because you can find in Catholicism spirituality of the hermit, you could find spirituality of the soup kitchen, the activist, you can find spirituality of an academic lover of higher education, you could find the spirituality of a simple Franciscan who doesn't take to education much at all, but has huge big heart, love of God. There's the simplicity of just mental prayer, simplicity of the rosary, where you do meditate and pray on the same words over and over again, or the more complex spirituality that you get in a high mass, where there's much, shall we say, orchestrated drama and well planned out liturgy. So anyways, Chesterton is pointing out this in here. I'm sharing this connection with you because I'm enjoying Henry David Thoreau's Walden Pond. He has so many wonderful things to say, and yet at times he's like, "Oh, you're missing. You're going. There are these problems that need to be corrected." Let me give you some examples. Let's see. Here, here's David. Henry David Thoreau from Walden. "When we consider what, to use the words of the Catechism, is the chief end of man, and what are the true necessaries and means of life, it appears as if men had deliberately chosen the common mode of living because they preferred it to any other." So he's going to make a slam about our choice. We are who we are because we think we have chosen a form of life, but we really haven't chosen it. We're just kind of going along with it because that's the tradition of our family, our lives, and what have you. So he says, yet people, general people, honestly think there is no choice left. I have to be what I am because there's no alternative. But alert and healthy natures remember that the sun rose clear. It is never too late to give up our prejudices. No way of thinking or doing however ancient, can be trusted without proof.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, it's brain wrinkling. And I think we all have been there. We feel that sense. He's encouraging people to question their prejudices. And of course, you can question your prejudices that come from your ethnic background. You can question your prejudices that come from your relatives. You can even say your sports background, whatever it is that you just assume. And he goes on to say, you, no way of thinking or doing, however ancient, can be trusted without proof. Now there we have to be careful, because it's in this in this good Christian man, I will call him a good Christian man, he's falling dangerously into what Catholicism has considered a heresy, namely rationalism. Rationalism without faith. To question everything without proof is to say I won't believe anything unless you can prove it to me. Now there's a lot that you could say. You might say, I understand so much, but I don't understand it completely. To demand that you understand everything completely is to turn religion into a philosophy, into a theory of believing or thinking that doesn't require any supernatural faith. So that's one of the one of the beauties of David Thoreau. He's starting to live. Maybe if you remember, the reason I'm thinking of him in the context of that Saint Fiacre. Fiacre had that sense. I got to separate myself from the world. I wanted to go and live by myself. I'm gonna make a little garden. I'm sure he meditated on nature all around him. That's very, very much like Thoreau, except Thoreau in his book Walden doesn't contemplate supernatural realities. He's not setting up a shrine to the Blessed Mother. He's not separating. He's not establishing a shrine to any god. And you might even say he's beginning to worship nature as his god, which of course is pantheism, right? Okay, I'm going to take a couple other quotes from Henry David Thoreau's Walden after this next break. Okay, I think we can get in our last break, right, Nick? So let's do that. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to EWTN, Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are 88.5 FM WSFI and 750 AM WNDZ.
It is amazing to be living in a post-Roe v. Wade America, but our country racked up a body count of tens of millions under Roe. And still today, the body count continues to rise, and the vast majority of these babies never received a proper burial. That's what the 11th Annual National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children is all about. On Saturday, September 9th, on this special day, the Pro-Life Action League visits the burial places of aborted children at other memorials put up in their honor. And we solemnly pray for God to heal the deep wounds of abortion in our society. To find your nearest day of remembrance service, visit ProLifeActionLeague.org and click on the tile that says National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children 2023. The National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children, Saturday, September 9th.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. In this last segment here, I want to share a couple other quotes from Henry David Thoreau's Walden. That's a book we're going plowing through. And it reminds me of what G.K. Chesterton said about so much of what is good in Catholicism is found in many other spiritual movements, the new religions popping up, but they don't have the fullness of the truth. It's a good way to appreciate what Vatican II says about the Catholic faith as the fullness of the truth, because you can get a little bit here and a little bit there, but if you don't have the fullness of the truth, you're going to go wrong one way or another. And we need the church called the Universal Church, Catholicism, to help us embrace the good that we find and know where to avoid the errors. And that's what we call heresy. And of course, that's a common problem. As a matter of fact, I was with a wonderful friend of mine who is a convert to Catholicism. He was a Baptist minister. I was able to talk with him recently, and he reminded me of the founder of Methodism. He knows the world of the Protestant world even better than I do. He was living in it, of course. And he reminded me that the founder of Methodism, John Wesley. John Wesley. There's a statue of John Wesley in Savannah, Georgia. I have a friend who's lives down there now. As a matter of fact, I play his cartoons every now and then. There's a wonderful young man by the name of Seamus Coughlin who writes amazingly funny kind of political satire cartoons called Freedom Tunes. Anyways, he's down there in Savannah, Georgia, and I was not so surprised to find a statue to John Wesley, the founder of Methodism. Anyways, my convert friend, Daniel Vizant, maybe you could see his life story on The Journey Home, the EWTN's wonderful series called The Journey Home. Anyways, Daniel Vizant, he reminded me that if you read John Wesley's writings on the little way, the way of love, which he was trying to just focus on the essentials of loving God and loving neighbor, which of course sounds very, very good. And so he was trying to promote his religion, which became Methodism, as, okay, get rid of all the excess baggage. You know, don't worry about the rosary, don't worry about the Mass, don't worry about confession, don't worry about the Bible, etc. Just reduce it to the basic simplicity. I didn't realize this, but John Wesley, he lived around the time of St. Teresa of the Little Flower, and you could almost take word for word John Wesley's writings. He kind of like plagiarized, he stole them from St. Teresa of the Little Flower, except leaving out the Catholic stuff. St. Teresa, the Little Flower, would not say, don't worry about the Mass, don't worry about the rosaries. She'd be trying to help us understand all those better in the process of focusing on the essential elements, love of God and love of neighbor. You don't throw away the other beautiful things. You understand the Mass better. You understand the rosary better. You understand what sacramentals are. You understand what beautiful prayers and the whole calendar of saints really can help you with. So anyways, that's another little example of what Chesterton is trying to say in terms of embracing Catholicism. And interestingly enough, the quote I used from Henry David Thoreau and his dangerously teaching the heresy of rationalism, he also, a little bit later, dangerously teaches the religion or the problem of anti-rationalism, or what we would call fideism. It's faith alone and no intellectual content, no worry about getting things rationally correct, as it were. Study doesn't matter. Books don't matter. It's just a kind of a free-flowing acceptance. That you get that in St. Francis of Assisi, of course. St. Francis of Assisi famously burned books at times. He thought when you see that people are being led astray by their schooling, then you talk against schooling. You know, but the Catholic way is to improve schooling, to get it right, not to throw it out. Here's something from Walden, Henry David Thoreau's beautiful book on his appreciation of living out there in his little hut, which is in Massachusetts, of course, a little bit west of Concord, Massachusetts. Concord, Massachusetts, of course, is famous because it was the place where the shot heard around the world happened when the British soldiers lined up against the American colonists and started the Revolutionary War. Anyways, so Henry David Thoreau is living 80 years after that, and already he's getting a little upset about the way America is growing. And here's where he falls into a kind of anti-intellectualism, whereas that quote before showed him to be an anti-faith person. He says, "So I went on for some days cutting and hewing timber and also studs and rafters, all with my narrow axe, not having many communicable or scholarly-like thoughts." In other words, he's building his little house and he's not being the poet. He's not being the philosopher, which other times he was. So, and he was singing this song to himself. I don't know if he wrote this song, but it's just a little poem version. "Men say they know many things, but lo, they have taken wings. The arts and sciences and a thousand appliances. The wind that blows is all that anybody knows." It's kind of cute, and you get a sense of...
Whoa. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's a brain wrinkling. It's brain wrinkling, and it's attractive because we oftentimes feel that way, that all the stuff you read doesn't add up to much, and that because new teachings contradict old teachings in science, as we sometimes find, but yet the proper balance between rationalism and fideism, between faith and reason, is especially brought to us by a full embrace of Catholicism. See that Catholic will bring you in one direction and push you away. Henry David Thoreau was inspired, but he didn't want to embrace Catholicism, so he lacked that fullness. Anyways, I'm Father Tom Kolesz. You've been listening to The Winds of Change, EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are 88.5 FM and 7:50 AM.
Can you see the winds have changed? Meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is wrought. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed.